Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Muskies Matters with Lakeland University head football coach Colin Bruton. Muskies Matters is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Lakeland coach questions about the Muskies, football or sports in general, or just seek Coach Bruton's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, the coach talks to us about the big victory over Benedictine and what he's expecting against Wisconsin Lutheran this week. He discusses with us how hard it is to coach if you have overly sensitive players. And a fan looks to find out if the coach has a single brother. So let's join Muskies Matters. So let's welcome back Coach Bruton this week. Coach, do you have team updates for us?
It's been a pretty quiet week. You know, we're excited about where we're at in the conference standings. We're excited about the win over Benedictine, and we're looking forward to Wisconsin Lutheran. But, you know, it's midterm week for our guys, so we've had a lot of tests and a lot of guys really really focusing on academics this week, and that becomes a little bit of a challenge. Just they're a little tired when they come out to practice, and some of these guys have had 3 and 4 tests this week. But it's also a good time to kind of get over the hump academically and kind of start looking towards the second half. So that's kind of where our focus is, and then obviously getting better for WLC.
Yeah, the big victory over Benedictine this last weekend, like you mentioned, at halftime you're leading by 15, I believe it was, but just really dominated the second half. What were some things that you saw, or some things that changes that you made, or something that allowed you to have such dominance in the second half?
You know, it wasn't a whole lot of adjustments for us. We felt pretty good about where we were. It was 29-14 in the first half. We gave up 2 scores on pass plays that were really busted coverages, and things that we corrected pretty quickly on the sidelines, and felt like we were, defensively we were in pretty good shape. And offensively we kind of survived in the first half. We scored 29 points in the half, which is obviously good. But the defense set up a score. We had an interception down to the 2-yard line, and then we blocked the punt for a touchdown. So, the offense was moving the football, but wasn't having the type of success we've been used to from our offense, and we kind of knew it was coming. The second quarter was a real driving rainstorm, so we were kind of just trying to get out of the second quarter, and we got to the locker room at the half, and we came out of the locker room. The sky had the rain had stopped falling quite as hard, and it was just a more pleasant second half to throw the football, and we felt pretty good at that point. I think the key to that game, right before the half, Benedictine had 2 possessions down 29-14, and we forced a fumble at the 2-yard line when they were going in for a potential score to cut it to a 1-score game, which was big. And then they got the ball back at about the 30, so really short field, and we were able to force a 4-and-out, which was big. So I think those 2 stops defensively gave us some confidence, and we felt going into the half with a 2-score lead, we were in pretty good shape.
Talking about that defense, you had some really big individual performances. Dante Moses and Vincent McNeiman really stand out to me. Talk about what their performances had as an impact on the team.
Yeah, they were big. I thought defensively it was by far our best effort, just as a whole. So that was exciting to see. And we got some guys that are really starting to step up and play better. Vincent, I should say. He's a freshman defense end for us, and he's a kid that's just been coming on and, been starting for us, the whole year. But as you can see, really just gaining more confidence and becoming better. But, he had 3 sacks on Saturday, and a lot of those sacks were set up by really good coverage downfield and other guys kind of flushing, the quarterback to him. And he was doing a good job staying where he should be and making explosive plays. But a lot of it was really a team defense performance. And then Deonte Moses has just been a kid that flies around. He's like, we've joked, he's the smallest linebacker in the country. He's, 5'6", 155, but plays with such a motor and plays with such passion, and it's just always around the ball. He's got the ability to kind of not get blocked. He has the ability to really get small and turn his shoulders and get thin. And he's been coming on. He's getting a lot more comfortable playing linebacker. And, he's one of the leading tacklers in our conference, and he's making plays behind the line of scrimmage. But he's just so explosive for a guy his size. He really explodes through contact, explodes into small spaces, and just plays hard. If we had 11 of them, we'd be in pretty good shape, even with his size, just because he flies around and just plays so damn hard all the time. So, we're really happy with those 2 guys, and they were 2 of a number of guys we thought defensively really played well.
My apologies. I think I said both those names wrong. So that shame on
me. Yeah, Deonte Moses, and then it's McNeiman Vincent. So it's we got it confused during the recruiting season this year. But we just call him Mac. It makes it easier. So
my apologies to both of them. Don't tackle me when I come up there. I'm sorry.
No worries.
Ryan Sample came in. I thought this was going to be a big kind of quarterback duel, but your defense really did a nice job against him, holding him to 17 of 39 passing. What were some keys that you thought to limiting his effectiveness?
Yeah, I think a couple things. You know, we play a lot of man coverage. We're a big cover one, cover zero team. We played a ton of man coverage against Benedictine's receivers, and not a lot of teams had done that up to this point. And I thought our secondary was really good. I thought, you know, we did a good job. A lot of those, I think we sacked Ryan 8 times, and a lot of those were covered sacks where he really had nowhere to go with the football. The other thing that we saw, you know, from watching film was that he made a lot of plays when he left the pocket, when he was able to get in scramble situations, and I felt like we did a really good job. We really stressed, especially to our defense ends, you know, just having to be very, very consistent in their rush lanes and you know, make sure they were keeping him kind of contained in the pocket. He liked to kind of escape wide, you know, when he was in scramble situations. So we really tried to stress, you know, our rush lanes and how important that was. And I just think we didn't let him get comfortable outside the pocket. And that's, like I said, where he really made some of his big plays. And, you know, they had a few drops. They had a couple times where, you know, it was wet, especially in the first half, where he had some opportunities and some receivers, you know, dropped some crossing routes and things like that. But overall, I think it was a combination of, you know, we played a lot of man coverage and really did a good job of sticking to the receivers, and then we did a really good job being disciplined in our rush lanes. And you know, our defense, as the game went on, just got more and more confident, and that was cool to see. It's kind of a, you know, one of the first times all year where we've strung together a really good effort for 60 minutes instead of just these pockets of good football. So you can see the, you know, the team kind of building confidence.
Who were your offensive, defensive, and special team players of the week?
Yeah, you know, offensively, we had a number of guys. You know, Michael Whitley, it sounds like a broken record, but, you know, he threw for 3 more touchdowns. He ran for another, you know, threw for over 300 yards. And, you know, that's just, you know, it's kind of becoming old news. It's kind of the expectation now that he's going to put up big numbers. But he was really good. You know, Aljada Meese continues to run the ball. He was over 11 yards a carry, you know, so I thought he ran the ball really effectively. You know, our receiver play, it was really a balanced effort. Jody Harrison, Alante Gardner, Des Morse, Jamal Hawkins-Gonniers, you know, all those guys, Des Minetti, they all contributed. But really the thing that's been really, really awesome watching our receivers is how well they block. And our receivers are really selflessly blocking down the field and blocking for each other. And you know, we run a lot of the wide receiver screen game, and it's really impressive. It's inspiring to see how they're blocking, how hard they're working in the blocking game. So I thought that was a huge key offensively. Now I'll give you one offensive lineman. We were really happy with Ryan Frame, our left tackle. So you know, Ryan's a junior. He was injured, missed the first couple weeks of the season with kind of a leg injury, but he's back, and he played a really, really good football game. And you know, a lot of times you don't see those offensive linemen get a lot of credit, but Ryan Frame really, really played a good football game. Defensively, like we said, you know, Mac and Deontay were both outstanding. You know, I thought, like I said, our guys in the secondary, Oman Smothers, had 4 pass breakups, and a lot of those were shots down the field where he was kind of one-on-one with their big receivers. And, you know, 4 times in a row they challenged him, and he was able to make pass breakups. So I thought he really played well. And then Jerry Stokes, our other starting linebacker, is really coming on. He's playing better every week and starting to figure it out. And then from a special team standpoint, you know, I thought Conrad Foss doing a really good job kicking the ball, you know, both in kickoffs, kind of placing it where we want. We do a lot of different things with our kickoff unit, and, you know, sometimes we're kicking it deep, and other times we're trying to chip the ball to different areas of the field, and I thought he did a really nice job in special teams, and believe he may have became the school's all-time leader in career extra points, so that's something we're checking into. Want to make sure we have that stat accurate, but if not, he's going to break the record within a week or two, so that's exciting for him. And again, you know, sometimes the kicker doesn't get as much credit. We're very aggressive. We don't kick a lot of field goals. We're very aggressive in the red zone on 4th downs. So he doesn't sometimes get the opportunities that he may deserve, but that's just part of our scheme. So, but Conrad Foss doing a great job in special teams.
This weekend you take on Wisconsin Lutheran. What are some keys you see in that game?
You know, a lot of it, we talked this week, a lot of it is just our maturity. You know, last year we came off a really emotional win at Benedictine. WLC came to Lakeland, and you know, we had a situation. We were actually playing our home games at a high school field last year because of the status of our field with the rain and things like that before we got turf this year. And you know, we really played a really poor football game. WLC came in and played with a ton of energy, took it to us. You know, we jumped out early. We jumped out 20-7 early, and kind of took our foot off the gas and started coasting. And they came back and really dominated us in the second half and totally outplayed us. They outcoached us. You know, I didn't think myself, you know, I didn't do a very good job of making adjustments defensively. So a lot of it is just our maturity. A lot of it is us coming in with the focus that we need, with the intensity that we need, with matching their emotion and doing that for 60 minutes. I thought we did it early in last year's game. You know, that's going to be one of the huge keys. And then you know, their offense, you know, Pat Mathias and their quarterback, you know, he had a career game against us last year, and we have not let our guys forget about that. He threw for 4 touchdowns. He ran for 2. He was over 200, you know, passing and running in the game. So, you know, he had a career game against us, and we got to contain him. And, you know, he's a running threat. You know, he's got a strong arm, and we just got to make sure that we contain him. Offensively, it just comes down to us doing what we've been doing. You know, we feel really good about where we're at offensively and feel like we're going to have some opportunities to move the ball. You know, they got a good defensive line, and J.D. Leisman is the returning conference player of the year on defense, so he's a guy that we'll have to make sure that, you know, we know where he's at on the defensive line and continue to get bodies in front of him. But we feel pretty good about how our offense matches up.
Speaking of Pat Mathiasen, he is that kind of quarterback who can be a dual threat, but has struggled with his accuracy a little bit this season. Are there things that you're seeing in his play that you believe your defense can kind of take advantage of?
Yeah, you know, he's a good player. He killed us last year and really was, you know, it was as good a game as I've seen a quarterback play against us in many years. So, you know, we know that he's a guy that's a dual threat guy. You know, I think we got to take away his run game. I think he's a guy that probably would prefer to run before he throws. So I think that's part of it, is we got to make sure we're really sound in our run fits. And they do a lot of stuff spreading you out. They do a lot of stuff with jet motion, and a lot of it's just window dressing to kind of get to more basic zone concepts or that kind of stuff. And you know, they're also going to give us some quarterback draw stuff or some design run game for him. And we just got to make sure that we're really sound in our fits, make sure we're really sound in how we're bumping our motion so that our run fits stay good. And then I think in the pass game, you know, again, we want to keep him in the pocket. They try to get him outside and some sprint out stuff, and he's dangerous. You know, he's dangerous when you give him that run to pass option. So I'm just kind of keeping him in the pocket and you know, try to make him more of a passer than a guy that has that dual threat ability.
Now, you talked last week about you're right in the big heart of your schedule right here with the three teams that I would gather would be the biggest competition for you winning the conference title. For as your team is in game 2 of this, how do you keep them focused on that? Because I would think that the intensity of each week would be pretty extreme.
Yeah, you know, I think the last couple of years, you know, Benedictine certainly has been a big rival for us. WLC's become a big rivalry for us. And then Aurora really in the last 2 years has really come on, as, you know, since Coach Ponce has been down at Aurora, and we have them next week. They've really come on and obviously tied us for the conference championship last year. So we understand that it's kind of a week-to-week challenge. And the biggest thing is trying to stay focused, you know, in week. So, you know, Benedictine's over, and we got to be done with Benedictine, and we got to focus now on WLC and then not look ahead to Aurora. And we feel like if we take it week-to-week, you know, we really feel like we match up well week-to-week. It's just, again, having that maturity to stay focused on the task at hand. And we've used the analogy about trying to climb a mountain this year, and you know, we kind of talked about getting to, you know, the first part of this thing, you know, before Benedictine, we kind of climbed the base camp, you know, and we put ourselves in good position, we felt like, to kind of really make our ascent. And now, you know, Benedictine was the first step of that climb, and now we're looking at WLC, and that's the next step of the climb, and just trying to stay focused. But, you know, I think anytime you're playing these games in a row, you know, the biggest thing that you worry about as a coach is just an emotional letdown. And, you know, we're in a situation where if you don't show up emotionally week to week, you got a chance to get beat, you know, and that's what we're really focusing on, just making sure we're emotionally and mentally ready to play these games. It's a challenge, but we also feel like we have a veteran team and a team that's doing a good job of staying focused, so that's our hope.
Is that emotional part hard when I would think players are so excited about pulling off the one victory, and then all you have to do is prep for the next game? I would think it's kind of comparable to a boxer that's gone 10 rounds and still has 5 more to go.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt that's how it is. And really, you know, like I said last year, the one thing about last year's games has kind of given us a reference point for our guys. You know, last year, like I said, we went down to Benedictine and it was a really emotional game. They missed a field goal with 40 seconds to go that would have tied it. And we rallied a few times in that game. So it was a really emotional win. It was a road win at Benedictine and homecoming for them. And we just never got back from that game. We never emotionally got back to zero and able to recharge our batteries for WLC. And you know, hopefully the way we won against Benedictine, hopefully while it was a big win for us, it wasn't one of those games that came down to the last minute. So you hope there's a little bit of emotion left from that. And I think our guys, you know, we continue to stress the fact that we're looking for bigger things, you know, and we're looking for to be a team that can make it to the playoffs again and compete at that level. And in order to do that, we got to continue to get better. So I think our focus has been a little bit more on just, you know, week to week improvement. And I think that helps you kind of remain focused on the task at hand.
Well, let's head to fan questions. We start with Terrence, who says, in the conference, you've scored 117 points and given up 35. Do you ever look at numbers like that sometimes and just go, wow?
Not right now, we don't. You know, I think if somehow we can stay at that type of level, that type of pace at the end of the season, we may look back and you know, but I think when you're in it, you're looking more week to week. You're not really looking at the big picture of the, you know, the conference scoring and things like that. You know, we felt like in the two conference games, we've done a lot of good things against, you know, Concordia, Wisconsin, and against Benedictine. And, you know, we feel like we can continue to do some good things. We know there's going to be, you know, bigger challenges, and we don't expect to beat conference teams by 30 or 40 points. That's not the way it works when you get into conference play, and we understand you got to play at your best. You know, but if at the end of the season we look back and that's how it plays out, you know, that would be a really impressive really impressive stretch that we've had. But we don't look at it, you know, there's no goal going into the game saying we want to beat these guys by 30 or beat them by 40 or we want to put up so many points. It's just, you know, how can we find a way to win the game at the end? How can we find a way to put ourselves in position to win the game week to week? And that's really the focus and the challenge every week.
Brandon would like to know, why do some coaches prefer a 4-3 or a 3-4 as their defensive scheme?
Yeah, I think some of it is just you know, what you've learned and what your belief is. You know, I think some teams feel like with a 4-3 with four down linemen, you got a better opportunity to stop the run, and you know, you got four bigger bodies in there. Other coaches like, you know, to play a three-man front. You know, with a three-man front, a lot of times you're getting to a four-man front. So a lot of 3-4 teams really become a 4-3 at the snap, because you're blitzing one of those linebackers to become a 4-3. But you're able to disguise which of those four linebackers is the fourth defensive lineman, if that makes sense. So I think a lot of it's just, you know, personal preference. Some of it is personnel driven. You know, sometimes you look at your team, and you know, we've been a four-man front team some years, we've been a three-man front team some years. This year we're playing both four and three-man fronts, and some of it is just personnel. You know, last year we were a four-man front team in 2014 and 2015, and you know, last year in 2016 we were almost exclusively a three-man front team, and it was really personnel driven. We didn't have the depth, the quality depth on the defensive line last year that we, you know, that we've normally had, and as a result we had to become a three-man front team. So some of it, I think, year to year can be, you know, can just be based on your personnel and what you have. You know, we're not an NFL team that can go out and sign free agents and stuff like that. You know, sometimes you get in a situation where you're recruiting at a certain position just isn't as deep as you'd hope. You know, or you played a lot of older guys for a couple of years and you have, you know, not a lot of experience coming back at that position. You may want to go a different direction. But I think the best coaches are flexible. You know, they don't try to fit their kids into a scheme. They try to fit their scheme around the talent of their kids. And that's what we've always tried to do, is take the guys that we have and how can we maximize their abilities, you know, every year.
Is there a scheme that you prefer one over the other?
Not really. You know, we've been, the one thing I would say is we've always played five defensive backs. So we've been, both a 3-3 and a 4-2, but always with five defensive backs. And I think it's really hard to play a true 4-3 or a true 3-4, you know, against spread offenses that everybody's running today. So I think, you know, almost every 4-3 team is really a 4-2 team. You know, even in the NFL, you'll see the teams are in their nickel look, you know, 60-70% of the snaps in that nickel corner position really has become the Sam linebacker position in the NFL. So we've been a 4-2, and I think we've done some good things out of the 4-2. We've also been, you know, more of a 3-3, and we've had some years we've been really good out of the 3-3. I don't think our overall philosophy changes. We still want to be aggressive. We want to bring pressure. We want to play a lot of man coverage. It's just, how do we get there? How do those pieces fit to get to those looks? So I don't have a huge preference either way. It really depends on what we have, you know, with our personnel.
I just want to know what defense we're looking at when you're standing on the sidelines in South Bend. So I just want to
we'll see what we got. We'll see what the Domers got at that time. But yeah, it could be a mix of both. You know, this year we've been playing, you know, we've been trying to figure it out. So we've been playing some 4-2, we've been playing some 3-3, we've been playing a little bit of 3-4, and we kind of go interchangeable. You know, you might see this, you know, a four-man front and a three-man front in the same series. So we're trying to figure it out.
Chuck asks, he says, it seems that teenagers are so sensitive today about hearing things that might offend them. Can you ever get angry and yell at a player without having them head to a safe space?
Yeah, I think if you're going to play for us, you better be able to be you know, take some honest criticism. And it doesn't mean that we yell. We're not a staff that does a ton of yelling. You know, I very rarely yell, but we're going to be pretty direct with you if there's something we need to correct. You know, especially on a Saturday, we don't have time to sugarcoat it. We have to be, you know, pretty direct with you with what we're seeing and what mistake you made and what we expect. You know, the time that I'll yell to guys if I think our effort is bad, if I don't think we're playing with great effort, or I don't think an individual player is playing with great effort, that's the time that you're going to hear me get very vocal and get very loud and get on a kid. And that's something we just don't accept in our program. You know, you're going to play hard all the time. Beyond that, you know, we're trying to coach. We're trying to make sure that they're getting better. And sometimes, you know, usually I'd say the best way to do that isn't by yelling. It's by explaining. It's by coaching. It's by teaching. The other thing I'll say is that every kid's different. You know, there's some kids I know that I can get on very directly, and there's other kids I know that I have to treat a little bit more gently because you know, they may lack a little bit of confidence. They may just not respond to that type of coaching. So I don't think you can necessarily teach or coach each kid the same way. You got to kind of understand who that kid is. You know, I'll probably be more direct and more honest with a senior than I would be a freshman. You know, I think freshmen need to gain confidence and learn, and they need to be taught a little bit more. And I think sometimes with an older kid, you can get on them a little bit more when they're making a mistake.
Rod would like to know, how much of an impact can a selfish player have on the chemistry of a football team?
A ton. You know, I think, you know, you try to do your best to drive out selfishness. You know, our second core value in our program is selflessness. So we talk about being selfless and always putting the team ahead of yourself. But, you know, there's some selfishness in all of us. You know, I think it's just part of human nature, and guys want, you know, individual accolades, and they want to be on the field, and they you know, they want their hard work to go noticed, and they want to kind of reap the benefits of that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that as long as it doesn't cross the line. And that's what we talk to our guys about. You know, we'll have some receivers that will come in and they're upset they're not touching the ball more. And that's okay, you know, as long as they can voice their frustration and not let it change, you know, how they're blocking for the other receivers, how they're running their routes. You know, I think that's okay. You know, well, if guys come in and they're upset because they're not playing more, and you know, we may be playing well. We had some guys this week come in and just, hey, coach, why am I not playing more? And you know, we're doing a lot of good things, but I'm excited that they want to play. They're not accepting their role. But as long as that doesn't cross a line where their selfishness or their self-interest, you know, comes in front of the team, that's when we have an issue, and that's where we're gonna sit that guy down and talk to him individually. But you know, I think if you keep your team focused on team goals, and you keep them focused on the fact that we're in this together, and you continue to point out, you know, the role that everybody has on the team, it becomes a little easier to have those conversations then. But there's no doubt, you know, selfishness can impact a team. It can tear a team apart, and you know, as a coach, you're always kind of, you know, trying to work that chemistry. I think chemistry is an interesting thing because it always seems like teams that are winning have good chemistry, and teams that are losing have poor chemistry. And it's one of those chicken or the egg arguments. You know, did the chemistry come first and then the winning, or did winning games, you know, bring good chemistry? And I don't know if I have an answer for that, but I think it's something that as coaches we're always trying to balance.
I would think that if you look at all of the sports out there, that probably hockey and football require the least amount of selfishness from players just because of the structure of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, in our games, it takes 11 guys in every snap. You know, it really takes a very selfless nature. You know, if you're not a guy that's, like I said, our receivers have done an outstanding job of blocking on the outside, and a lot of what we've done has been because they've, you don't often see receivers that want to block and take pride in blocking. And our guys are, you know, they're trying to count pancakes, and they're really taking pride in that. But it's a selfless act. You know, it's not something that goes noticed beyond, you know, probably the coaches and the guys in the film room, you know, and maybe some select fans. You know, it's not like people track wide receiver blocking, you know, in the stands. They see the guy who catches the ball and the guy who scores a touchdown, and very rarely do they recognize the kid that's really blocking. But it takes that. If you're going to be good, it takes guys that are really selfless.
Sharon asks, she says, as a Bears fan, I would gather that you were not surprised that Jay Cutler was voted the quarterback that players would least like to play with.
I would say this. I am surprised by that, just in the fact that there is some absolutely brutal quarterback play in the NFL. There are some really, really bad players that are starting at quarterback, or guys that aren't, you know, probably NFL. I shouldn't say bad players are all playing in the NFL, but not NFL quality quarterbacks, it appears. So I was kind of the last guy on the Jay Cutler bandwagon in Chicago. So, you know, I was still expecting him to come out and lead the Bears to the Super Bowl, but I guess that dream has failed. That ship has sailed, but, Yeah, I'm not surprised. You know, I don't think his reputation around the league is very strong. It doesn't seem like a guy that people like to play with, but there is some really bad quarterback play out there.
Aaron would like to know, are the Packers sunk with Rodgers out for the year?
I don't know if this question was written by Aaron Rodgers, but God, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope they're done. I think the Huntley kid's going to be okay. I really do. I think the fact that he's been in their system for you know 3 years, I believe now, is going to help him. And I think he's a quality backup quarterback. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays really well in the short term. Can the Packers get to where they want to go? Can they be a Super Bowl team without Aaron Rodgers? I don't think there's any way they can. But it wouldn't surprise me if Brett Huntley plays really well this week. If you got a need for a quarterback on your fantasy team, I would recommend picking him up, because I think he'll, in the short term, play very well.
If Aaron Rodgers is listening to the show, that would be super cool. I got to tell you right now.
That would be pretty good. Let me know. You know, if Aaron wants to come hang out, we'll definitely become Packer fans for a day and hang out with Aaron.
Brad asks, what advice do you have for a dad whose 9-year-old son wants to start playing football and would like his dad to come out and throw the ball around with him, but the dad is, let's say, a little more on the academic side when it comes to athletics, if you get my drift?
Yeah, I would tell Brad that I think it's the effort that counts. You know, I think it's probably a situation where your son just wants to spend time with you, and you getting out there and throwing the ball, even if you don't throw a perfect spiral or you don't catch it every time, you know, the fact that you're out there trying and you're out there just spending time with your son, I think, is what's most important. You know, so I'd recommend going out and throwing the ball around, and you'll get better throwing it, you know, and catching it the more you do it, and the more practice you get as well. So I'd recommend getting out there. It's something I got to remind myself with. There's times I come home from practice and I'm tired or I'm frustrated with our team, and you know, Colton, my 8-year-old, will want to play Legos, and you know, he's got an imagination that he's building stuff, and I have no idea what he's talking about, but he's got different stuff he's building, and he wants me to come help him, and I don't know what's going on, but it's just the act of sitting down with him and being out there and spending the 20 or 30 minutes doing it with him that I think matters to him. You know, he's explaining to me how his, you know, this thing does this, and I have no idea what he's talking about, but in his head it all makes sense, right? And I was never a big Lego guy, but that's one of Colton's passions, is playing with Legos. So I think for me, it's, you know, sometimes you do, you know, what may not be your comfort zone, you know, for your kids, and I think that's just part of being a good father.
Future engineer out there.
That's definitely the path I think he's going. So he's got a really creative mind, so it's pretty impressive when you see the stuff he builds with the Legos.
Sean asks, he says, does your phobia of cats make Halloween your least favorite holiday?
It certainly doesn't help Halloween. The one thing I'll say is that my phobia of cats is kind of balanced by my love of candy. So it kind of goes in both directions. You know, we take the kids out trick-or-treating, and Kanan now is 2, so he'll dress up and kind of do the trick-or-treating thing for the first time. But, you know, I make sure Colton gets enough candy for the both of us. So he's got to go out and he'll probably hit a few more houses than he really wants to, you know, but we make sure he gets out there for the full allotment of time and gets candy for dad and gets candy for himself. So, yeah, the cats certainly don't help. You know, it feels like these cats come out of nowhere around Halloween time. You see them all over the place. I don't know if it's the weather in Wisconsin or what, but I feel like I'm seeing more and more cats crossing the street and running around. But, yeah, it's definitely not a strength for Halloween, but candy does a good job of offsetting that.
What's Coach Bruton's favorite candy then?
You know, I like a lot. I'm a chocolate guy, so I like the Reese's peanut butter cups. I like Twix. I like Snickers, Hershey's, M&M's. I like it all. There's not a whole lot that I won't eat. So I had some M&M's for breakfast this morning on my way out of the house, and you know, I'm a big candy guy.
That's a great breakfast there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very healthy.
Philip asks, what was your favorite Halloween costume you wore as a kid?
You know, I was always I dressed up a lot as a football player, and I dressed up a lot. My dad is a football referee, so he's been reffing for 36 years. So I wore I was a referee a couple times. That was always good. You know, a lot of it. You know, my parents had 5 kids, so we weren't going out and buying elaborate Halloween costumes. It was, you know, what do we have around the house? What can we wear that isn't going to cost a lot of money? You know, so a lot of times it was. You know, I was a football player. It was during football season, so I had my pads. I had all that stuff. So I was a football player many years. I was a referee at least a couple times. Those are probably the two that I remember the most. I don't remember ever having a real elaborate Halloween costume.
Kenny would like to know, what do you think is the most amazing planet in our solar system other than the Earth?
Wow, that's That's a tough one. You know, I don't really have our staff. We laugh. We rank things a lot, so we'll talk about, like, you know, what's our top 10 states, or what's our bottom 10 states, or what's our, you know, top five, you know, cities to live in, just different stuff like that. We're always kind of creating these ranking systems, and, you know, when we got a free minute, we've never done a ranking system of planets. You know, but maybe we should. Maybe we should get a ranking system of planets and decide what the you know, where Earth would rank. I'm hoping Earth would be number one. If I had to name one, I'd probably go Pluto, just because in my lifetime Pluto was a planet, then it wasn't a planet. Now I believe it is a planet again. So I probably would go Pluto, but you know, I don't know if I have a great answer for that one outside of the fact that Pluto could become a planet and not be a planet and be a planet again is pretty impressive in about, you know, 25-year span.
Beth would like to know, she says, my husband always leaves his socks laying around wherever he decides to take them off. He never wants to put them in the laundry. Is there a way to get through to him that he needs to stop being so lazy?
Beth should probably talk to my wife, because I'm not very good at this stuff either. I got in trouble for leaving some dishes laying around and not getting them to the dishwasher. So I'm definitely guilty of this. I think it's just part of being a husband, and you know, we're not very good at this kind of stuff. My suggestion to Beth would be, you know, stop doing the laundry. You know, stop picking it up, stop doing his laundry, and he'll figure it out pretty quick when he gets the socks and they're not smelling very good, that maybe he's got to, you know, get them to the laundry. So that would be my suggestion. I don't know if it'll work, but I think that's probably your best effort at this point, is just stop doing the laundry, stop picking it up after him, and see if he notices.
Rick would like to know, what's the best practical joke you ever pulled on someone?
Whew, that's a tough one. We used to do a lot when we were in college. So we would get the garbage cans and fill them with water and lean them on somebody's door and then knock on the door. So when they open the door, they get a garbage can full of water. You know, it started with using the old school, you know, kind of the dorm garbage can they provided. You know, so it's like a 13 gallon or whatever it is, a smaller garbage can, the little waste basket. And then from there, we started taking the 50-gallon garbage can out of the bathroom and filling it up with water from the shower and you know, letting somebody open the door and getting a tidal wave of water coming on them. So that was one we did a lot in college, you know, when you're messing around on a weeknight or something like that. So that's probably the best one. I wouldn't say I'm great at practical jokes. We try to get Colton, you know, on April Fool's, and he likes the practical jokes, and he's always trying to think of good ones, and you know, they're usually not really effective, but you know, last year we put clear masking tape. When he opened his door, it was clear masking tape from the top of the door frame to the bottom, you know, hoping he'd walk into it, and we got him a little bit. He didn't quite walk fully into it, but he walked into it a little bit. So me and my wife did that, and that was fairly effective, so we'll probably try to come up with something again this year for him, because he likes the jokes.
Denise would like to know, she says, Coach Bruton, you seem like such a good husband and dad. You are so dedicated and have such a good outlook on life. Any chance you have a single younger brother?
Well, first of all, thank you, Denise. I appreciate the compliment. I'm sure when Brenda listens to this, I'm sure she'll agree wholeheartedly. I do have a younger brother. I have an older brother as well, so there's three of us Bruton boys. All three of us are happily married, though. All three of us definitely outkicked our coverage, so... you know, we're doing well, and you know, like I said, all three, you know, married with kids and doing well. So no single brothers. We do have a couple single, you know, assistant coaches on the staff. So if you look at the Lakeland website and have an interest, I guess you can send those guys a direct message, and you know, maybe that might be an option. But we got great guys on our staff, but yeah, my siblings are happily married, and like I said, we definitely outkicked our coverage. So that's certainly. You know, something we talk about and like to brag about. We did well with our choice of wives.
Well, let's close out this week with why it's great to be a Muskie.
Yeah, I think it's a great time here at Lakeland. You know, it's midterm week, so like I mentioned earlier, our guys are really, you know, they've been bogged down Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday with finals, but that as a result, then we have fall break today and tomorrow, so our guys get a little bit of a chance to recharge academically, kind of start focusing on the second half of the semester and kind of turning the corner academically, and that's a positive. It also gives them a couple days just to, you know, just to kind of rest and recover. And, you know, the semester becomes a grind, especially when you're playing football and you have all these requirements with meetings and practice and things like that. So I think it's a great time for our guys to, you know, to kind of do that, to just recharge their batteries a little bit. And I think they're excited about that. And tomorrow night we get an opportunity to go to one of the local elementary schools, and we help out with a Halloween night. So we'll have about 35 guys volunteering, and, you know, the kids will dress up, and our guys will run kind of Halloween-themed games and hand out candy. And then the school has kind of a – what they used to be just kind of a lit kind of like a corn maze type walk. And it started off with our guys just being out there giving out candy, and now in about our 10th year of volunteering with Lincoln Urban Elementary School, it's become kind of a haunted walk where our guys are jumping out of the bushes and scaring a bunch of second and third graders. But it's become a good tradition, and the kids look forward to it. So, you know, we're looking forward to that. It's a great way for us to get back a little bit to the community, and just a really fun community service project for us. Our guys enjoy it. They go out and have a great time with the kids, and we got a group of guys that they're kind of just big kids. You know, they love being around the youth in the community, so we're excited about that. And then on Saturday we get another opportunity to get a win and get one step closer to our goal. So there's a lot of good things going on here at Lakeland.
That's awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
I appreciate it, Rob.
We want to thank Coach Bruton for joining us on Muskies Matters this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Lakeland coach, please send them to us at ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. That's ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report. We'll see you next time on Muskies Matters.